Thank you so much, Steve. It's Bill Left with you. Wendy Snyder on vacation until Monday. My guest live in studio, Dr. Terry Mason. Dr. Mason is the chief operating officer of Cook County's Department of Public Health, and there's so much to discuss health-wise. Thank you very much for being here, Dr. Mason. Greatly appreciate it. Hold on. Let me say that again.
Grateful to be here.
There you go. All right. If you wouldn't mind, I know this is a strange thing to start out with, but I think this certainly bears some mention. They talked over to the people at Google about what health problem, state by state, is Googled the most, and I'm very surprised to hear what it is in Illinois. Tell everybody, what is the number one health issue that is Googled in Illinois?
Syphilis.
Syphilis. And why would that be?
I'm not sure why. That's what people think about. But, you know, here's the other part, is that there are many other diseases, and people may not know what they are.
Yeah.
And they may think, because we are, many of us just don't know.
Yeah.
And we may think we have something that we don't.
Yeah.
And syphilis in Chicago has been very popularized because it was something that people like Al Capone had. And
right.
Some people know about
it. It took the life of Al Capone, right?
It took the life of Al Capone. And there were some great Roman folks that also had syphilis and things of that nature. Because syphilis is a disease that does create lifelong problems, both for the person who has it, who doesn't get it treated, and for an unborn the unborn child whose mom may attract this before she delivers the baby. So, and it creates a lot of difficult, very difficult problems.
Sure.
Including death.
Yeah.
And it can infect your brain and things of that nature. So it's a pretty important disease. I would say if you'd done this a few years ago, probably HIV or AIDS would have been the most Googled topic.
Well, I don't know how old you are, and it's none of my business, but when I was growing
up... I don't mind.
Up,
I'm 67.
Are you 67? You're doing something right. I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. All right, so when I was a kid, the thing that anybody who was engaging in any sexual activity was worried about were diseases like syphilis, mm-hmm. and then the AIDS epidemic came through, and syphilis took not just a backseat, but a way, way, way backseat, but then it kind of reemerged, didn't it?
Yeah, syphilis did reemerge, and people get, you know, these days you can get twofers, or even a threefer.
Yeah.
So if you're having, particularly if you're having unprotected sex with different partners, you could get a dose of syphilis and a dose of gonorrhea and a dose of chlamydia all within a night.
That would be a bad night. I would refer to that night as a horrible, horrible night. Is the prevention of syphilis just as simple as wearing a condom, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, no. I mean, the prevention of most sexually transmitted infections is as simple as wearing a condom that you're wearing correctly.
Yeah.
And for the woman, now it's a little more difficult. There are female condoms.
Yeah.
But obviously, you should insist that your partner wears protection, assuming these are heterosexual encounters.
Yeah. Whoever's getting syphilis now, if you had to do a breakdown in category-wise, are you looking mostly at teenagers, early 20s?
Well, we're looking at people 15 to 24, and it's actually higher in the what we call the men who have sex with men group.
Yeah,
here in the city of Chicago. But let me just give you perspective.
Sure.
Do you know that if you're having unprotected sex.
If
you're having unprotected sex with someone,
my wife will kill me.
You're 55 times more likely to get gonorrhea.
55 times more likely.
50 times more likely to get chlamydia than syphilis.
Oh, that's a staggering number,
isn't it? And 13 times more likely to get gonorrhea than syphilis.
Wow.
So even though people talk about it, it's certainly not the most common sexually transmitted infection we have. By far and away, chlamydia rates, and actually, unfortunately, the Cook County has the highest number of cases of gonorrhea and chlamydia in the United States.
Because we have
a lot of people who are having unprotected sex, and they're spreading it, and we're talking about younger and younger and younger people.
All right, so when you hear that, your job title, Chief Operating Officer of Cook County's Department of Public Health, when you hear that, do you say to yourself, well, we have to do something to stem the tide. We have to do something to reverse this. What are we not doing here in Cook County that's leading to numbers that are that huge?
Well, first of all, we need much more prevention messaging.
Yeah.
And then secondly, we need to make it extraordinarily easy for people who may think they have been exposed. Because here's the thing. Most of these diseases produce absolutely no symptoms early on. So we always think of gonorrhea with having a discharge, or even chlamydia with having a discharge, or syphilis with having a sore on the penis.
Yes.
But the sore on the penis for syphilis can come and go, but it doesn't mean the disease went away. The discharge for a chlamydia and gonorrhea can come and go, and you still have not gotten rid of the disease.
Yeah.
So you need, the only way is not to guess, but get a test.
Right.
And nowadays, it used to be in the old days to get a test for gonorrhea or chlamydia, you had to insert a little swab. But nowadays, the technology is much better. All you have to do is urinate in a cup, and you can get a test for both gonorrhea and chlamydia just from a urine sample.
And are the results instantaneous, or does it take a little while?
Well, you have to send it to a lab. You send it to a lab. But yeah. But the test for syphilis still requires a blood test.
It does. Yeah.
And we have to know that if you had sex tonight, and you had unprotected sex, it does not mean that you could have gotten something that night that will show up in a test tomorrow.
Right.
So some of these things have what we call an incubation, or a period of time between the time you become exposed to it and the time the test takes to get positive.
Mm-hmm.
So I want people not to be misled that if they have a test, if they had sex on Friday and they decide, I'm going to go to the doctor and get a test on 2 days later,
yeah,
and the test is negative, that they're negative. No, they're negative at that point in time. But it may take more time before the test actually becomes positive. And secondly, it does not mean that you don't have anything because you didn't get a discharge with respect to chlamydia and gonorrhea.
If I may state the obvious, if you do suspect that you have something like this, you may want to refrain from any sexual activity until you know for sure. Is that
absolutely
correct?
Because you don't want to spread that to anyone else.
Right.
But that does happen. Right. And because people are having sex all kinds of ways these days, when we do an examination, we have to look for all the areas where persons could have been penetrated or had a sexual organ placed for evidence that there is a problem.
Yeah.
So, for example, we have a lot of people who end up with gonorrhea of the throat.
Yeah.
And so you have to swab the throat just like you do when you're looking for a strep throat for the tonsils.
Right.
Or you have to swab any of the other body cavities or spaces or parts where the sex actually took place. And for syphilis, you obviously have to wait and get a blood test. And the blood test doesn't turn positive. If you had sex on Monday, the test doesn't turn positive on Tuesday. It may take a week or two before
there's an incubation period. Then.
Yes, yeah. There is an incubation period. And the same thing is true for gonorrhea and chlamydia. Those, though much faster, will produce some symptoms, but not always. And these things are not without long-term consequences.
All right, getting to that really quickly. Let's say you find out, you go in and you test it, and then you find out the tests are positive that you do have it. What takes place after that?
If you are positive, the great news is that you can get one medication that'll take care of both your chlamydia and your gonorrhea. So that's
good news.
That's good news. That's the good news. The bad news is that we've got a lot of gonorrhea that's resistant out there. So we have to make sure that people are getting the right medication, and then they follow up.
Yes.
To get another culture or a test after they've completed the medication.
To see if it's been eradicated.
To be sure that it's been eradicated and you don't have one of those resistant strains. Syphilis is a shot. Okay,
a one-time thing?
It's usually a one-time thing.
Yeah.
You get a shot. Now, that doesn't make you syphilis-proof.
Yeah.
That just takes care of that particular infection at that time.
Yeah.
And syphilis, as you know, goes through different stages. There's a primary stage where people may get a rash.
Yes.
They may get a sore on the penis or on the inside of the vagina or wherever that the sex took place.
Yeah.
And that takes a while for that to come. And there are no symptoms. There are no symptoms. And, of course, we have to be concerned because if a woman is pregnant, she could pass this on to her unborn child.
Right.
Both the syphilis, the gonorrhea, all these things can be passed on.
That voice you hear is that of Dr. Terry Mason, the Chief Operating Officer of Cook County's Department of Public Health. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about what you say, Dr. Mason, is causing a lot more disease than ever before, a major factor. It's something that relates to all of us. We'll get into that in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Wendy's off this week. She'll be back on Monday. My guest is Dr. Terry Mason, Chief Operating Officer of Cook County's Department of Public Health. The first segment, we talked about sexually transmitted diseases, but now this is a great topic.
Sure.
There's something causing an illness or a series of illnesses, of diseases, and I like your theory. I agree with you. What is it?
Well, if we look at the, if we ask what is the number one cause of death in America, people would say heart disease.
Right.
And I would ask, is it? And the reason I ask that is because what are you really talking about? You're talking about a blockage in the blood vessel that goes to the heart, stops the blood, and the heart muscle dies.
Yeah.
The question is, how did that blockage happen? Where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it came from something that was in the blood that interacted with the wall of the artery that irritated it and made it scab up and cause that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where did that come from? That came from the food we're eating.
Yep. Yep.
So it's the food, if we want to look at the most important cause, the most important person in this chain or important component in this chain, it's food. And the food is what we're eating. Much of this processed stuff that the body is, in a very oversimplistic way, I would say, is saying, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And so it reacts. It creates what we call inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Inflammation is just irritation. That irritation, the body's like, okay, I've got to try and fix this. So it tries to heal over it.
Yeah.
But what happens is, what do? We just keep insulting it. Every 3 times a day, we're sending another batch of this inflammatory stuff into our blood vessels, and we never give our bodies an opportunity to heal. So we do things, and people have chest pain, and we tell people that those are early signs, but they're not. Chest pain is not early. That's late.
Yeah.
It's like waiting till you get slurred speech and what have you, and you're having a stroke. You're not going to have a stroke. You're having a stroke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the issue and the things that we do very quickly, where we put little, and these are life-saving things, we put little catheters in and we put balloons in and we just get to the area that's blocked and then we blow up the balloon and smash the inflammatory plaque against the wall and then put a little stent in to hold it open. But we've done nothing to deal with the proximate cause of the problem, which is the food.
Tell me what your thoughts are on this. Our country, the United States,
sure,
accepts food that other parts of the country would just reject as dangerous. But here in the U.S., we revel in those foods. How do we change this?
Well, first of all, I think that what we have to do is we need to go back to foods in a more natural state.
Yeah.
And we need to eat foods that come out of the ground more than we eat foods that fly over the ground,
yeah,
walk on the ground, slither on it, swim in it,
yeah,
those kinds of things. That's what we need to do. Secondly, we have a major problem with our production. So, for example, one of the things I was going to talk about with regard to chlamydia and gonorrhea, we talked about resistance.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the issue is, how are the antibiotics becoming resistant? Well, what we're doing now is we're feeding our animals, our chicken, our cows. We're feeding them feed that contains antibiotics and the antibiotics to help prevent them from getting infections. But these antibiotics are mutating because the bugs they're fighting are now getting smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And we eat the meat from these things, and then we get these bacteria that are now resistant to what we would normally get. And we're at the point right now in America where we're down to maybe one or two antibiotics if the ones that we have don't work. And this is a very serious problem of antibiotic resistance in America.
Yeah.
But the biggest source of it is coming from our food.
Have you seen this commercial where they take on McDonald's and they show chickens and they say that McDonald's is giving chickens various growth hormones and things that are making it dangerous? They're making them grow too fast, too soon, and the result is not good for us. Have you seen any of these commercials? They're very scary.
Yeah, well, what we've done is our commercializing of the food system.
Yeah.
In order to get it, to make it more quote unquote productive,
yeah,
and to do it more efficiently and faster, we're using agents that allow the time between the time it takes a chick to go from a fertilized egg to a chicken. We've shrunk that time by more than a third.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily without consequences. So the foods that we're eating are creating this inflammatory response in our body. That inflammatory response shows up as a cancer. It shows up as heart disease. It shows up as a stroke. It shows up as diabetes.
Yeah.
It shows up in various sundry ways. And we at the Department of Public Health are looking at how do we begin to educate our public in a way that makes sense, that gives people the information that they can use to make an informed decision about what they're eating. I'm not pushing one thing. I'm just pushing good food, clean water,
sure.
exercise. That's
right.
it.
Right. The and basics.
So, the basics.
Do you think there's a correlation? My wife and I have discussed this with friends of ours about how kids, mostly girls, are developing faster, and everybody goes, well, it's got to be the growth hormones. Is it the growth hormones?
It is the hormones that are in the food. We have children now, girls that are starting their periods as young as 10.
Yeah.
And this is because when we're giving these things, again, there are some studies that seem to show that these hormones that are being fed to increase the productivity of our meat supply
yeah.
are creating problems when we ingest it.
Yeah. So for the average person hearing this who says, wow, I agree with you. What do I do today? What do they do today?
Well, what I would suggest is that there are alternatives that people can go to if they want to continue to eat these meats. There are places where people do not use these things. Many of them are religious organizations.
Yeah.
I would also support strongly that people consider eating far more stuff, as I said before, that comes out of the ground, vegetables of all sorts. I have no, I mean, just whatever you like, but vegetables and fruits and drinking water, not stuff that contains water or made from water,
right.
but water. And we're fortunate to have very good water here in the city of Chicago. Many people take it and put it in bottles and sell it to us. So we have a wonderful opportunity to do a much better job. And, of course, don't leave out some exercise because we're not doing enough either.
Do me a favor. Spin back for just a second. You said many of these places that are serving the better foods are religious organizations. Why is that?
Well, because many times people have a consciousness about what they're growing and how they're growing it. So not to mention any particular ones, but there's some that happen to be over in Indiana, not that far from us.
Yeah.
Who
the
have
Amish farms? Are
the
you
Amish
referring
farms,
to them?
Yes. Yeah. They have some very strict rules about how they grow their food, how they feed their animals and things of that nature. So that's why I said many of them are religious organizations. Not all, but many of them are. And I think as the American public becomes smarter and more educated about what we're eating, what we should be eating, we should eat more stuff that comes out of the ground, less of the stuff that flies over it, skips over it, swims in it,
right.
those sort of things. And right. definitely not those things that eat garbage.
Yeah.
Bottom
yeah.
feeders.
Yeah, I'm with you. So nice to meet you, Dr. Mason.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm going to put you on speed dial. I will need your services on a daily basis from here on in. Is that okay?
I am only too happy, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to be with you today on your show.
Grateful to have you. That's Dr. Terry Mason, Chief Operating Officer of Cook County's Department of Public Health. If people want to know more, it's cookcountypublichealth.org, correct?
Is the
website.
That's
the way to do
yes,
it? Thanks for being here.
You're so welcome, and thank your guests, your listeners.
Sure.